Sylvia and me.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
This is Elizabeth Bryan Jacobs, and welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Artist, author, jewelry and clothing designer, philanthropist, and creator of Creative Awakenings. Elizabeth, I am so happy to have you here today on our podcast. We're here to find out how you managed to go through all of your journeys. You were happily married and made a decision to leave that marriage. You worked with Chicken Soup for the Soul. You created Creative Awakenings and so much more. What motivated you to move on?
Well, Sylvia, it's a great question and a long story. I was very, very happily married. And at the same time, I was one of those very young women who got married and kept my eyes closed. I only opened them to the positive things in my relationship, and I was kind of blinded to the negative things. And I take full responsibility for that, because I think that, you know, while as women we may start out doing that subconsciously, at a certain point we kind of know that we're doing it, we engage in it, and we go along. So once I opened my eyes and left my marriage, which was a very nice high-end lifestyle, I was devastated. Not only to leave someone with whom I was still in love, but to now be the single mother of two small children. And what I had closed my eyes to was really the financial disrepair that existed in the relationship that I was in. And that, so,
yes, that happens. Unfortunately, so many women wind up leaving all of their financial activity to their spouses. And as you've found out in your own life, as you discovered, that was something that you had to deal with.
Right. Not only deal with, but take responsibility for, right? Because yes, we may be raised to defer to our husbands, or that may be the dynamic we sign on to in our marriage, but at a certain point, it's really up to us to kind of step into our own financial wellness and financial awareness and take responsibility for whatever kind of life we're leading. Otherwise, we have no control. And I think that along with many other women, probably millions of women, you know, when I did leave, I had nothing, or I had very little. It was devastating. And I still did not know how to manage finances in any reasonable way. So that was very difficult on many, many levels, because without financial knowledge, even if you're trying to start a business or working or doing anything, and you don't know the first thing about budgeting or managing money or any of those things, you're still going to end up in the same place you were when you left.
Well, one of the things that we had talked about that I didn't realize, you're not just an artist, you're an author. You made clothes, actually. You designed clothes for people like Farrah Fawcett. So you had a lot to fall back on as far as your creativity. How did that help you move on?
Everything I did, making art, designing clothes, I designed jewelry that I sold out on QVC. Those things were all, you know, really stepping into my own power and gifts, which was a part of my marriage that was encouraged only to a point, and certainly discouraged as a way to earn money or, you know, really contribute to my relationship financially or spiritually or emotionally, was just not what I signed on for. I deferred to my husband. I, you know, subjugated everything, my soul, my desires, my, you know, deepest creative powers came after him, always after him. And I chose that. So I take responsibility for it. doing it after I left my marriage was fantastic and, you know, really happened very quickly that I was designing clothes for Farrah Fawcett and Bonnie Raitt and Chicken Soup for the Soul book. But what I didn't know and the knowledge that I still didn't have was about making money and managing money and ensuring that while I was doing all of these entrepreneurial things that I had some kind of regular income coming in, which I did not. And so while everything looked really good on the surface, which, as you know, Sylvia, it often looks really good on the surface.
Yes, it does.
It wasn't that way at all. So, you know, those things got me through it and certainly showed me that I had the potential to succeed in creative endeavors, but they certainly didn't pay the bills, and I certainly didn't get a financial education from them. I actually got even more and more devastated. My former husband filed bankruptcy. I was forced to file bankruptcy. I eventually lost the clothing business. I lost the jewelry business. Yes, I wrote a wonderful book for Chicken Soup for the Soul and then another book, but books don't make money unless you sell, you know, a million copies. So those things did many, many other things for me. They taught me many lessons. They, you know, put me in contact with amazing people who really helped me survive emotionally so I could do what I needed to do to take care of my son financially, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. And you know, one of the problems that we face a lot is on the surface to everyone else, it looks like we're so successful. We should be happy. We should be thankful. Look at everything. I mean, take a look at what you were doing. Anyone from the outside would go, oh, wow, I would love to be doing that. She must be so successful. Right. And it's so, you know, it's so hard sometimes. How did you deal with that when I'm sure people around you were going, ooh and ah, and look how wonderful she is.
I will tell you, as glamorous as that looked, I prayed before that television shot that I would not faint on camera because I hadn't slept and I probably weighed 105 pounds. I mean, I was really at almost my lowest, worst point. And so while it looked pretty fabulous, you know, there I was wearing the clothes I designed, selling out jewelry on QVC. It was like one of the lowest points in my life. And the one thing that saved me through all of that, really saved my life, was learning to practice meditation. And so I was fortunate to have a fabulous meditation teacher. I started my practice probably within 6 months of leaving my marriage. And that was 17 years ago. I still meditate every single day. And I really do credit meditation with saving my life and transforming it.
But how did you even think of meditation? Did somebody turn you on to it? Had you read something about it?
Well, that's a great question. And it came out of the first person that I dated after I left my marriage was a very successful builder who was really into meditation. And he was just one of these guys, you know, you never would have guessed by looking at him that he had this deeply, you know, spiritual side and had actually lived in a meditation house as a single father with his child for 4 or 5 years. I mean, he was a real meditator. This was like no nonsense. And it's not an easy meditation path. It's called Vipassana. It's the Buddhist path, and it's can be very rewarding, but it's also can be very, very difficult. And, you know, not for the faint-hearted at all, but, you know, incredibly rewarding. And so we dated for a couple of months, we broke up, and then he agreed to teach me to meditate.
Well, you've kind of turned your meditative and your therapeutic channel, you've channeled into something that you've started. You created Creative Awakenings. Tell us about that. I actually had a chance to experience it. I had no idea what the experience was going to be. I couldn't imagine myself doing anything with art. And yet you changed that and you changed the women in the room, you changed their whole outlook in a lot of things that they had done in life or wanted to do. Can you expand on that and tell us a little bit more? How did that come about?
So, sure, that's a great question. It has a wonderful genesis. And again, you know, writing the books and doing all these things that I was doing in my post-divorce life were really figuring out who I was and what I wanted to do with my life. And processing my emotions was obviously a huge part of it. So, you know, meditation was one part. I've always been an artist my whole life. And so I really pushed my art making. And I just very organically started developing different ways to process my emotions through art, knowing nothing at all about art therapy at the time. I knew nothing. I was 40 years old. I had heard of art therapy. I knew I wanted to be an art therapist, but that wasn't in my near future as a single mom. So I just started randomly gathering women in my neighborhood, which was not an upscale neighborhood at all, and sitting in my garage of the rental house on the floor and, you know, just putting out some cool materials and helping them process their emotions through that, throwing in a little meditation, destroying the art we created. Then in those days, you know, we were in a garage or we were outside, we used to burn the pieces of the art that we made and say an affirmation and toss them into the air. And so it all started on the floor of my garage. And almost selfishly, I think, because I really began to understand at that point that not only could I improve my own life and recover from my trauma, but by helping other women process their own trauma, wow, that was like the greatest gift of all to me, was to help other women. And, you know, being in that community, because Sylvia, you know, it doesn't matter if you have $100 million, $1 million, or you don't have a dime. We're women. We all have the same worries. We worry about our kids. We worry about our parents. We worry about, you know, how other people see us, what we're wearing. We worry about breast cancer. These are things that are, you know, common to every single woman, no matter what walk of life you come from. We worry about our relationships. And so I found tremendous joy and satisfaction in being able to use my gifts to serve other women. And that it just kind of went on from there.
And if I'm not mistaken, did you once say art therapy was created by a woman?
There were one or two men in there. I don't want to leave the men out, but primarily, yes, it was founded by female pioneering women who, you know, really understood the benefits of creativity and creative practices in a therapeutic situation.
And at some point when we tore it up, as you said, when you first started doing this, you actually burned it. The feeling of letting go and the freedom that is felt when doing this, it goes back to some of the decisions that we make in life. You made when you left your husband. I made, well, evidently twice, when I left my husband, my children's father, and then when I left my second marriage after a short time. But it felt absolutely freeing and empowering. I don't know of any other word. And as we looked around the room, we saw that all the women who were doing this at that special night felt something. And then when they were able to make the final one and just write one word down to describe it, how did you come up with that? Because it's such a tool and a gift.
Well, I think I realized early on that because, and first of all, I want to say thank you for saying that so eloquently and for sharing your own experience. I think I learned early on when I was doing this workshop that I, you know, while we're all born creative, but I was always making things and acting on it, and I never stopped. And then usually at a certain point in our lives, we men and women, we get very self-conscious, and that kind of shuts down our creativity, whether it happens in school or at home. And that never happened for me. I continued art making, and I was very blessed that my parents always encouraged it. And so I realized that women in particular need permission to fully express their emotions and fully let go. And art is such a terrific way to do that. And not just making art that, you know, looks good, but really, again, the creative process itself and the art in therapy part, the art as therapy and the art in therapy. And so, you know, the liberating thing comes from creating an environment for the women, for the guests, that's really sacred and completely safe and very playful, because we all have that creative part of us. Creativity is really just another kind of life force energy. We just lose touch with it. So when you provide all of these fun, crazy materials that so many women haven't touched, you know, since childhood, it's all of a sudden back to playtime, and the meditation, you know, adds to that. And, you know, I'm consciously supporting women in my guided meditations to help them access a challenge and to help them in releasing it through the meditation. And then, you know, once we're done meditating, it comes right out through your body and your hands and onto the paper.
And that it did for so many. And you talked about, you know, going back to your childhood. I mean, some of the equipment or the supplies that you had for us was fantastic. Finger paints, the pens that turned into watercolors, the glue that looked like the glue we used from grade school. It was very enlightening to be able to kind of go about even realizing it to your childhood and taking, as you said, all of the materials that you would have used then, and now we're using them as supposedly grown-ups, as grown women, many with families and children. And if our children ever saw us doing this, they'd go, "Mommy, what are you doing?" And it is, again, I'll probably repeating myself, it's very empowering and freeing to be able to be in a non-judgmental area. And everyone was really, it wasn't that people were looking at what other people were doing, they were fascinated. And it just pushed everyone to do a little bit different and think, oh, wait a minute, I want that stamp you have, I want that one. And the journey itself is amazing. So I think what you've creative awakenings is an exceedingly powerful tool, a very therapeutic tool, as well as a very fun tool. So to mix them all, you know, that's great. And then to have a glass of wine while you're doing it and you're talking to, you know, and you're meeting new people, there's nothing wrong with that either.
When you're able to be, like you said, in a situation, in a group of women, no one's judging, because we're going to make something and then we're going to rip it up. And then we're going to make something else. We're kind of all in the boat together. And you asked about writing the word on the canvas, and that actually came, and that's for the final piece of art, that actually came out of my studies towards my master's degree. It's another part of the information processing. You know, when you're coming right out of that creative place, or you're even still in it, it doesn't even matter what the word is. It's just whatever word comes up from your unconscious to describe that process. When you say it out loud and then write it on the back of your canvas, you've now processed your experience in a much more full way. And so that was a recent add-on that I really, really love. To creative awakening.
It was fantastic, because we went around the room and people actually were able to say the word that they put down, anywhere from freeing to empowering. There was a whole range, because we had people who had, excuse me, who had gone through real crises in their lives or didn't even know it. There were people who were trying to be perfection all the time. And all of a sudden, they didn't need to be.
I remember that night, as I've experienced so many other times in Creative Awakenings, you know, we said you can choose one word or many words. And one woman was talking about how she had been raped. Another woman was talking about her cancer. I mean, these were not lighthearted things that were being shared, but the room was somehow still very joyful and celebratory because of what we were, how we were processing this together. It's always so beautiful like that.
Exactly. And as women, you know, we're told so many times and we're kind of taught not to really be vulnerable. We can have feelings, but we're not supposed to really, you know, yes, men are supposed to be strong and so on, but women are supposed to not just be soft and amicable and vulnerable, but we're not supposed to show it, because if we show it, then, you know, we've got so many adjectives that are then placed on us.
Right. And we have to allow ourselves to be vulnerable, alone, together. And that doesn't mean you have to like sob all over your partner or your husband or whatever, but, you know, choose a good friend or figure out how to process it yourself through something creative or meditation. I mean, I still go through it myself. You know, I realize sometimes I'm not giving myself enough permission to just let everything hang out in my art making. And so, you know, that's something that is constant and continuous in our lives, but it's really an act of self-love. I really believe it's self-love to allow yourself to be vulnerable, express your vulnerability, you know, however you need to get it out. And then guess what? You feel so much better.
Well, self-love is the most important thing. If we don't have that, it's difficult. I mean, it takes years. It took me years to actually accept and realize that, hey, yeah, I'm a pretty good person. It's the most important thing. If you don't find that, if you can't accept yourself, if you can't wake up in the morning and look at the mirror and go, hi there, I'm great. And it has nothing to do with vanity. It has to do with feeling good inside. And that then just flows down to everyone we're around, and especially our children. You were a single mom raising your children. I was a single mom raising my boys. We both have boys. I have two. You have three. And it's something that I know it took me a long time to accept, to realize that it's very important. And we're still trying to figure that out. Women are still trying to figure out how to refocus their lives, how to reimagine what they really want to do, how to reorganize their lives, how to repurpose. And those are all things that you've done an amazing job at, not only doing it for yourself, and I know it's an ongoing process, but doing it for others also. Now, I just wanted to cut in for one second. As you know, this podcast is called Sylvia and Me. Now's the time if you have a question that you want to ask me.
You and I are both kind of on the same side of so many other women who, if you looked at our lives, you'd never in a million years know how far down we've been, right?
Well, so, yes.
And so I guess I want to ask you the same question. Your worst, lowest moment, how did you step on that path to self-love?
You know, I think there was a funny little incident that happened a number of years ago after a long-term relationship ended. He was a total narcissist and had me thinking that there wasn't anyone around who liked me. You know, I wasn't a fun person. And all I did one day was walk into a market. I ordered some steak for the boys. I forget how they liked it, blackened or Philly or whatever it was. And the man behind the counter knew exactly what I was talking about. In fact, he told me how to cook it and what to do with it. And the following day I walked in, he was busy at the counter. There was another guy. And so the guy who had waited on me the day before looked at the other man who was going to wait on me and said, "Be nice to her. She smiles all the time. She's a really nice person." And I said to myself, whoa.
Wow.
And all it takes, and people don't understand, it can take just a little to say, to shake you up and go, you know what? Maybe there is something there. And you just put one foot in front of another. And, you know, I walked out of there smiling. And yeah, so I smile most of the time, or at least I try to, you know, even when it's not inside of me. When I was going through, when I filed for divorce about 5 years ago, I think it was, I don't remember, 4 years ago, a friend of mine said to me, you know, doesn't this, you know, aren't you upset? I said, yes, but what am I supposed to do? Sit here, you know, crying, we're having dinner. You know, it's the attitude. So that one little thing did it for me.
Well, I love that. And I mean, it goes to what the theme was in my Soul Model book, which was the second book that I wrote to find out how people got through really hard things that beyond divorce, that it really was this giving aspect, this And giving begins with yourself, right? And so by you smiling, you were not only doing something wonderful for yourself, Sylvia, you were making other people happy. And they were responding to that. So, you know, everybody has some way that they can reach out or reach in to themselves to begin that journey on that path of self-love. I love that story. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Oh, you're very welcome. And the other thing you brought up, Soul Models, the book that you co-authored, and in it, you talked to people who had some kind of challenge in their lives, and and they talked about how they overcame that particular challenge. And for you, you wrote that the challenge was forgiveness.
Beginning with yourself. I mean, the first person I really had to forgive on my own journey was myself for, you know, signing on to a marriage that was very unequal in the way the power was set up. It was very imbalanced. I had a wonderful life and I loved my former husband madly. But, you know, he definitely ruled the roost and I definitely signed on for that. And I had to forgive myself for that. It was excruciating to take responsibility. And I think that, you know, what I would say to anyone out there who's navigating anything is to first, you know, look at your own participation in it. Maybe there wasn't any and something horrible just happened in your life. And that is certainly the case for many of the people I interviewed for my book. But if there's any chance that you participated or stayed too long, or, you know, any of those things, it's wise and useful to look at your own participation so, you know, you don't repeat it again. But I wrote that book because I was so devastated by my divorce that I really wanted to learn from other people who had been through way worse things and share those stories. And it really just all came back to compassion, you know, compassion for self, compassion for others. Giving purpose to the tragedy, transforming it into something beautiful. And, you know, that's kind of your choice in life. You can give up or you can step up. And, you know, the people I interviewed were amazing, amazing human beings who navigated the things I couldn't possibly imagine. And I, you know, I'm so grateful to have written on their behalf, shared their stories, and, you know, even more grateful and blessed to have learned from them.
It is an amazing book because the stories in here are, you know, some of them are unbelievable. You know, everyone has their own trauma, some more devastating than others, and it's how we're able to put that trauma, what we do with it, whether we let it destroy ourselves or whether we're actually able to move on, maybe make something out of it. You've done not just creative awakenings, but you and your husband together have angel wings.
Yes, so we founded the Spread Your Wings Project, and that is the 501c3 that with a mission of sharing the therapeutic benefits of the arts and art therapy. I mean, here I am again. But we make massive pairs of angel wings in community with children and other vulnerable populations for fundraising. And we very proudly broke all fundraising records at a Dell Children's Hospital event in 2017. And, you know, I cut out 250 canvas feathers. The children painted them. They posed in front of them. And then I made them into a finished piece of very professional art. That was purchased and now will be installed at Dell Children Hospital, a new cardiac care wing. And now we're so excited to be partnering with Dylan's Wings of Change, which is a beautiful family that was born out of the Sandy Hook tragedy.
So a decision you made many, many years ago, and that is when you realized that no matter how loving your marriage was, you needed for yourself to end it. A decision that you made that long ago, and being a single parent has brought you on a journey that is amazing. This has been absolutely fantastic. Well, Elizabeth, this has been so much fun for me today. Thank you very much.
To find out more about Elizabeth and everything that she does, visit her website, ElizabethBryanJacobs.com. Thank you for joining me today. What a wonderful way to say goodbye to 2019 and ring in 2020. Our audience just keeps growing and growing. And there's another extraordinary woman coming up next week, finishing off our first season. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Missed any of season one? All episodes are available on our website at lifeofprey.com. Subscribe, rate, leave a review, and take us with you wherever you go. If you'd like to be among our sponsors, please contact me at sylvia@lifeofprey.com. If you have an extraordinary woman in mind, tell me about her. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Wishing everyone a happy new year. This has been a Life of Prey production.